Because the boredom doesn't live in your body, it doesn't live in your head, it doesn't live in your heart region. The boredom, like any of these emotions, they live in the mind. And that mind is not connected. It's connected, but that mind is not encompassed by the body. More the body is encompassed by the mind. So little by little, as we learn about the emotional world inside the body, things like anxiety and fear, things like caring and gentleness, as we hear about these more and more, and as we get to know them more and more, what we're also getting to know is this wonderful thing called the human mind. And that human mind, once we start to get to know it, can reveal so many truths, insights, which show us what the problems are in our life and also what the solutions can be. And the solutions which can come up, which are just quite astounding, where we realize it's not the world outside, it's not even the five senses which are the major problem, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touch. It's how the mind reacts to those things. That is the most important part of life, and your life. And little by little we have a more gentle way of reacting to our world, a more gentle way of learning and not being such a control freak of our five sense world. We learn to let go more, learn to appreciate when the five senses, when our world doesn't go the way we'd like it to go, when it's unpleasant, it's painful, we know how to deal with that with our mind. We know how not to fight a battle we can't win, and not to ask from this world something it can never give us. Instead, to learn how to make peace, to be kind, to be gentle to this thing we call our body, and beyond our body, the world of the trees and the sky and the plants and the air and all of you who live in this realm with me. So little by little we learn how to be kind to things. And that will always be an integral part of the meditation practice. Even just the fact that you're listening here, and the fact that in a few minutes I'll ask everyone who's listening to close their eyes, to sit comfortably and start meditating. But the most important part of these instructions is to have enough care for oneself, to give oneself the opportunity to meditate. You need to give something to yourself, to give this beautiful gift of time. Many people think they're too busy to meditate. They haven't got the time. They've got so many jobs and duties and decisions they have to make. But actually, if there isn't much time in your life, you need to make time. And time is made by meditating. You get so efficient, so productive, so able to see how much of life we waste and how little we really are effective the way we use our mind. So little by little we actually make time, just granting yourself, giving yourself the gift of time. It's a beautiful first start of loving kindness. And to give your body some comfort. I still cannot understand why it is when people start meditating, they think they have to sit in a special posture, even though it hurts like hell. You don't have to do that. The chair, the cushion, two cushions, three cushions, four cushions, I don't care how many cushions. As long as the body is at ease, it's comfortable. And when the body becomes at ease, it's a gift which you give to your own body, some comfort. Your body has to last many more years. And so give it that comfort, give it that ease, relax it, and your body responds. When I deliberately relax my body responds by being so grateful, it's delighted. It's beautiful delight which comes when the body is put at ease. Just sitting here, checking everything from the feet to the head to everything in between to make sure you're all comfortable. When all those parts of the body are looked after and given this concern and awareness, and just the humility that I say, I don't know best. Body, you teach me how to relax you. And little by little, my body teaches me just how to let go of tensions in the body, bruises, squashes, pains. It can learn how to let go of all of that. The body is a huge resource of wisdom. And I'm still learning after all these years of even being a monk, still learning just how this body can react to all sorts of challenges and just learn how to transcend them. So when I relax that body and get so delightful, it is a reaction of my body to my kindness. If I'm kind to any of you, I always see you smiling and saying thank you. And when I'm kind to my body, it's like my body says thank you. It's like it smiles at me. And only I can see that smile. I can see the smile of my body and I being at peace together, being working in harmony and friendship, learning and growing together. When I do that, my body just gets so relaxed. And often I notice that if that's as far as I ever go in meditation, just a relaxed body, that's wonderful. That is such a great benefit to be able to sleep well at night. I can always just lay down and relax my body so deeply, the body soon goes fast asleep. And it relaxes well, it sleeps well, and it wakes up refreshed. Because I'm kind to my body. And then later on, I find that you do exactly the same thing to your mind. You don't force the body into one particular posture. You find out what it needs, how it wants to sit, which is the best position. Chair. You know, sometimes when I see people on chairs, they think they should be sitting straight up. Sometimes they feel guilty when they lay or they slump back. What is this guilt anyway? It's not against some law or something. You ask your body what it needs. If your body wants to lean back, fine. Feels comfortable like that, wonderful. If it wants to lean up, fine, wonderful. Just ask the body what it needs to do to be comfortable for the period of the meditation. When you do that, the body responds, reacts, and you know, the kindness you give to your body results in peace of the body and the delight of the body. All these wonderful good qualities which live in the mind. You're actually cultivating the mental part of body awareness as well. That's why the delight which you feel in the body is not the same as physical delight, but it's the emotional response to the relaxation, the deep relaxation of our body. It means this physical body is at ease. It has no problems to solve. The eyes are closed. The ears are listening, but there's nothing really much exciting or challenging you. And the whole rest of the body is totally at ease. And that's such a delight, you see, emotional, mental delight of having a body which is not bothering you. And that gives you this wonderful opportunity, this freedom, to look at your mind. When the rest of the body has vanished, then all you've got left is the mind. And that mind, you can see, is, first of all, it's not really confident of being with you. It's like that it just either falls asleep or it just wanders off. And please don't challenge and fight your wandering mind or your sleepy mind. Be kind to it. Allow it to be. When you have this beautiful kindness, this acceptance and the love, and the best simile, you know, is from the Buddha's teachings. The best simile is like a mother loves her only child, cares for it, loves it, and just enjoys the child being there, even though the child can cause the mother so much problems and trouble. That's my kid, and the mother loves it to bits. And that's just like your mind. At first, it's a bit scared of you, and you're scared of it. But after a while, when you give it kindness, and acceptance, and happiness, the two of you live delightfully together. Here I'm talking about your mindfulness and your mind. You're aware of this thing called the mind. The mind just hangs out with you. It's as simple as that. This is not lessening the importance of meditation, mindfulness, and all these other wonderful techniques which sometimes arise by themselves. All this is... All this is doing is showing you just that when you have the kindness to this moment, to this mind, whatever you wish to call it, you engage together and you're with the mind. And the mind, as you enter this journey of meditation together, always with kindness, with acceptance, it will take you on some byroads, some discursions which don't lead anywhere, but at least it shows you just where not to go. And then often it will go on the wonderful path, the path of peace and stillness, where you get into this wonderful moment of now, where the mind becomes so still and silent. And the silent mind and the present moment mind are both beautiful, happy places where you and your mind can hang out happily for such a long time. Whenever there is the descriptions and the words, there's always, it's like busyness, it's like problems and trouble. I always prefer the silence, because when the mind is silent, it's like it's listening to the world. It's listening to life. It's just opening its ears, which are usually used to hear its own inner chatter. Those ears inside your mind are now free to hear Dhamma, the teachings which come from silent awareness, just being here. And these are teachings which don't have words. These are truths which later on you might try and express with what we call language. But everyone knows how limited language is, and how sometimes you have a truth in your heart in deep meditation, which is so difficult to explain, to describe, to put into language. Language is just so inefficient and weak. It's not powerful. It doesn't extend that far. So sometimes in the silence, in the present moment, you get some beautiful experiences. And this is only the start of your journey into this thing we call the mind. As you are still and silent, all these wonderful things happen as the body disappears more and more. That is the only reason, in my experience, why the breath is important, because it's just, I call it like the stepping stone across a river. On one side of the river you have the five senses with all the sights and sounds and feelings in the body and smells and tastes. On the other side of that river you have the mind. No five senses anymore. And to get across from one side to the other, a lot of times it's just too wide to step across or jump across. We have this little stepping stone in the middle called the breathing. And this is what happens. Soon, just as the mind becomes more and more still, as the body tends to disappear more and more, you're just aware of your breathing. Breathing in, breathing out, that's all really. Yes, we have all of these different techniques and things we can help you stay with that stepping stone in the middle of the river, the breath. Things like breathing in peace, breathing out, letting go, those sorts of things. But then after a while, just the mind, just, or rather you in your meditation, take that next step, leave the breath and go to the mind. You know where that begins? That begins just when we see the delightful breath. Because the breath itself is never delightful. This is the way your mind perceives your breathing. It perceives at this point not through the sense of physical touch, but through the sense of mind, of knowing. You know the breath, you don't feel it. That experience is usually the difference between just knowing the breath go in, go out, and knowing the delightful breath. Once you're on that side of the stream, the mind just grows and grows and grows in its strength, in its peacefulness, in its stillness, and in its sometimes strangeness. Beautiful lights, but not like you see in the world. Beautiful bliss, like you can't experience in life, except through the deep meditations. And great insights into the nature of what is this mind and the five senses and how they all relate together. Huge insights, but very delightful, very freeing, very liberating. So that's how this meditation works. So, I did a quick look at the little clock here because sometimes when I get started talking I can go on for a long time. So now is the time for me to be quiet, for you to be quiet, and just to leave the world of the five senses, to be able to go deep inside. Okay, so if you get yourself in your meditation posture, what do you think is your meditation posture to begin with? Sometimes laying on the floor, on the ground, it's okay if you can be aware all the time with good awareness. But it's usually better to be on a chair, or on a stool, or on a cushion, or somewhere where your body is comfortable, but also strong and alive, awake. Then you sit down, close your eyes, and then feel the comfort of your own body. Just sitting here, how are you, body? This is not looking at your body as your possession. I often say, don't think of your body as a slave for you to exploit, for you to care for. Just like you have an expensive car, you have to make it only rented or borrowed from somebody, you have to look after it. So I look at my body like that. With my eyes closed, much, much more sensitive of the feelings in my body, the sensations. And I want to make sure the body is really, really comfortable. Because I care for it. I start, as you all know, listened to this before, start with my legs. I had a peaceful day today, so if I'm ever really agitated, I start with my toes. Get them comfortable and work up, stage by stage. I don't care how long it takes, because I need to be peaceful. So today I'm reasonably comfortable, so I'm just going to be aware of my legs. How do my legs feel right now? This is obvious way of arousing mindfulness. I ask the question. When I see a good friend, I ask them, how are you? Then they are mindful of how they feel, and they give me the answer. It's like asking my leg. Left leg, how are you? Left leg, oh, pretty good, Ajahn Brahm, thank you for asking. I feel my legs with this questioning. And I continue by asking my legs, do you need to be adjusted, to be moved, to be scratched? What do you need? I'm here for you at this time. I check my left leg and my right leg. They're in pretty good shape. I'm kind to them, not just as a word, but as a way that my mind regards and reacts and practices to my legs. I'm kind to them when they're really comfortable. Go to my butt on top of a cushion. Because there's no one in this room except the AV man, I have plenty of time to adjust my cushion before I started. Sometimes when there's people here asking me questions and saying hello, sometimes I don't have the time. But today, my cushion is perfect under my butt. And my butt's really good, ready to go. So I move up to my back, give it a bit of a move around, stretching this way, adjusting that way. I care for my back. Still got quite a few years to go yet, so I have to look after it. Some parts which I keep quite stiff, some parts I let go of and relax them. Different parts need different strategies to be comfortable. I check the whole back, make sure it's all just in really good position. And my mind knows that now my back can be pretty stable. My back says thank you. I've been kind to it. I go to my shoulders, give them a bit of a move around, like a self-massage. I do that not just for a little bit of stretching exercise, but also just to check there's nothing I've missed. There's no twinges of pain. I'm being very careful with this part of my meditation, because if I'm not, I'll be disturbed. That disturbance will lessen the ability to move across the stream and have a beautiful, peaceful meditation. It sticks me on the body side. So relax my shoulders. And when I think they're relaxed, I relax them some more. Really get into this. And then down my arms. Don't have any problems with my elbows, but I check them out anyway. My wrists, my hands. Remember yesterday evening when I was giving the meditation before the talk, my hands were just one on top of the other. Today they're apart. And they feel good like this. I don't always put my hands in the same position. I check them. Are you okay down there? And say, yeah, thanks. Leave us alone, we're fine. And I give that kindness to let my hands decide how they want to be positioned. But I know that they have to stay there for 40, 45 minutes. They know too. And I move away from the hands and the arms back up to the shoulders and to the neck, making sure the head is well balanced. I've seen people, their heads too far forward, too far back, to the left, to the right. That must be very painful, it usually is. I don't need to use a mirror. I just use my awareness, which knows if there's any excess tightness in the muscles of my neck. And I find that it's well balanced. Go to the throat. Relax all the muscles in my throat. And really relax them. That's all I'm aware of right now. Just the inside of my neck, the throat. Checking, healing, giving this beautiful kindness, my own kindness to my own throat. Yeah, I can see some little tension there, because I do suffer from allergies. But they're hardly much there at all now. Now where my throat is at ease, move up to my face. Face is a bit hot today. It's a warm afternoon in Perth. I can feel the tingling muscles around my eyes and my mouth. Around my mouth are a bit aching. Had a quiet afternoon and now I have to talk. It's a little bit sort of resistant to movement, to talking. That's muscles around my mouth. But they're fine. I'll just relax them. Muscles around my eyes as well. So the whole face is totally at ease. And as I've taught many times, when I relax the muscles on my face, my emotions relax as well. That tightness of wanting to do something good. The fear of, what am I going to say next? All those silly things just disappear. Just being aware of the muscles in my face and relaxing them and relaxing them. So my face feels so at ease. And I've gone through most parts of the body. So I just observe now all these different parts all joined together, working in harmony together as this thing I call my body. All sitting here, relaxed, at peace. And as I continue just being mindful of my body, starting to arise for me now is a delightful feeling. Body at ease. It actually feels great. Maybe it's like you've walked a long distance. It's been hot. You sit under a shady tree with a nice cool glass of water. Feels beautiful. Body is cool, refreshed, at ease. It's drinking in the delight of relaxation. I feel that delightful relaxation. It's over my legs and over my body, mostly over my lower body. Don't know why, but great. It's up the back now, and the face, all these places which I have been aware of. It's like they're saying thank you. I paid them attention. I'm so grateful. I've relaxed them instead of forcing them, allowing them to choose their position rather than telling them what to do. It's the loving of my body. Being at ease with it, giving it respect. And sometimes I just love to stay just to relax body. It's like my mind is calling. Now's the time to go inside. And I do practice as I teach my peaceometer. How peaceful am I now? Really peaceful, actually. How peaceful are you? Be honest. Don't be ashamed or anxious or proud or just know. This is truth. Don't mess around with truth and bend it to suit you. So notice how peaceful is the mind. And know how, from experience, how to take that peace and make it stronger and deeper. Peace is delightful. So once I find peace, my mind likes to stay there. It doesn't want to go thinking about stupid things or even wise things. It doesn't want to think at all. It doesn't want to go planning or remembering. Oh, that's such a burden. It appreciates the freedom of now. Feels it. And lingers there. It appreciates the truth of silence. How you're not listening to second-hand wisdom anymore, which is words. You're right there in front of truth. And you dare give it a name. It's almost sacrilege. Silently in the present moment, letting the nature of now, this moment, in silence, let it teach you. For listening to nature, to Dhamma. I imagine, just like me, many of you soon become aware of your breathing. It's important, it keeps you alive. It's your inner connection with outside. If you want to breathe in peace, breathe out, let go, change it around. If you're already pretty still, just notice breath. Doesn't matter where you notice it. As long as you're aware. Breathing either in or out, that's all. Keep it as simple as possible. As you're watching your breathing, soon it becomes a delightful breath. You're moving away from the world of the five senses to the world of the mind. Don't be afraid of that world of the mind. It's healthy, safe, gives amazing insights. It's so joyful. I'm going to be quiet now to enjoy my mind. I'll speak again a couple of minutes before the end of the meditation, after which we can have the questions. coming close to the last couple of minutes of this meditation. Don't open your eyes or move the body yet. But use this opportunity to know how peaceful you are. To know just how this sixth sense, the mind, feels. When it's not dominated by your body. How beautiful peace, freedom is. And how relaxed is the body? So start to become more aware of your body now. To know how are your legs, your butt, your back, your arms and hands and shoulders and neck and head. So coming back into this physical world with kindness, with peace. So now ring the gong 3 times. When the last bell stops ringing, that's the 3rd time, that is a signal to open your eyes. Come out from the meditation. To just relax the body if you need to move it. Get a sip of water and start to look at the questions for today. Okay, we got from UK, from Germany, from the unknown country, and from the UK so far. Here we go. From the UK, Ajahn, many years of practice emphasize the importance of breathing and letting go. If COVID and death catch up with me, how can I die well and focused without being able to breathe properly while being sick? Sometimes we're not, can't breathe properly, struggling for your breath. But there's one thing which you know, that if you are sick and you're laying down in bed or even sitting down somewhere, sitting down doesn't take much energy, laying down doesn't take much energy. But if you are just, say, laying down and become very still, if you have been practicing a lot, you can keep your mind very still, by which I mean you're not thinking very much, if at all, and the mind just abandons the fear of the future. You're just here right now with what you have. It's one of the reasons why I developed and taught people who were very sick the old Emperor's 3 Questions meditation. Now is the only time that is real that you ever have. So can you be now when you're having trouble to breathe? Can you be aware of that feeling, the difficulty in getting oxygen? Can you know that? Whatever's right in front of you is the most important thing in the whole world. Can you be aware of that? And the most important thing, which people find it so difficult, surprising, but so difficult. Can you be kind to that feeling? And if you can be kind to that feeling, and you're with this feeling in the present moment, then it's meditating. What a thing about the importance of breathing and letting go. Breath is important, but it's not the be-all and end-all. And there's more things important than breathing. There's more things important, please excuse me, than life and death. We've done that many times. So little by little, if that really happens to you, it hasn't happened to you yet. So just don't worry about things when they're not even here yet. Instead, just be in this moment. If you have got any type of sickness or illness or pain, just if it really wants you to know it, then it's right in front of you. Then give it all your attention and be kind. Whatever you try and do, don't try and get rid of things, especially in sickness. Because when you are sick, we try and get rid of things. That makes us tense. It makes us tight. And that tightness and tension makes the pain worse. It makes the sickness less likely to heal. So just doing even that much would increase the opportunity and the potential that you'll recover, and you'll recover peacefully and happily. So if COVID and death catch up with you, death does catch up with you sooner or later. It catches up with all of us. But in those last moments, whatever difficulty you have, in the last moments, just if that you don't have this medication and stuff, you can just sit there and just welcome this moment. I'm saying welcome it. Make peace with it, be kind to it. Be gentle with this moment. And don't try and get rid of it. Be in this moment. This moment is already here. So you're not trying to change anything. You're being on this journey. And you're seeing people with extreme pain. They don't show any pain. They're supposed to have pain, but they're totally at peace. Amazing to see. What I'm saying is it can be done, and you know how to do it. So the trouble is with many people meditating, importance of breathing. Breathing is just one of the vehicles you use in meditation. I've given this simile a lot to the monastics especially. There's one of the suttas, the Samanyapala Sutta. It's the second teaching in the Digha Nikaya, which is the first set of scriptures which were recited at the first council. So it's an important teaching. And there, the new king, called Ajatasattu, he went to visit the Buddha for the first time. And he went in his chariot, as far as a chariot could go. Then he had to get off his chariot and walk through the forest in his slippers until he came to the hall. And then he had to take off his slippers to get to the inside the hall to see the Buddha. So every one of those had like different vehicles, the chariot and the slippers and then barefoot. You can't take the chariot into the hall to see the Buddha. You can't take the breath into the jhanas. You can't take them into nibbana. So each one of these is useful for a different part of the journey of meditation. And the breath is important as one of the vehicles. And it comes a time in your meditation, you're watching the breath, it's so delightful, and the breath vanishes, and just the delight is left. It's why I'm trying to find some way of describing these things. I picked out the simile of the Cheshire Cat in the Alice in Wonderland stories, I think it was. The Cheshire Cat started disappearing, bit by bit, until the Cheshire Cat's face totally vanished, leaving only the smile. And that's the wonderful remark of Alice. I've often seen a cat without a smile, but it's the first time I've seen a smile without a cat. Oh, there's a very brilliant piece of writing which describes what happens when, say, the breath disappears. And just the bliss is left. Often seen breath which isn't delightful, but see their delight when the breath vanishes. So don't be attached to that vehicle we call the breath. Make use of it as far as it needs to go, and then let it go. So how can I die well and focus without being able? Well, you're going to die anyway, so you don't have to worry about dying, just let go. And be able to breathe properly. Of course you don't breathe properly. You don't need to meditate. Emperor's Three Questions is the solution. From Germany. Dear Ajahn, in meditation I let go more and more, and then suddenly I have the feeling of getting no air and anxiety comes up. How can I handle this? Look, when you go to sleep at night, you're not controlling how much air goes into your body or doesn't go into your body. Your lungs know how to breathe. It's an automatic process. So you don't, it's not a trouble thing when people do too much breath meditation and focus on it as if it's the only type of meditation. And they focus on it so much that they don't realize it's a natural process. You don't do the breathing. The body does it. So you're letting go more and more, suddenly you have the feeling of getting no air. Wonderful! If you have the feeling of getting no air, you're alive. Otherwise you wouldn't have the feeling. And it's got no air, and the breath will come, the air will come in sooner or later. Sometimes the body is saying, I don't need the air. So if there's no air coming in, wonderful. Focus on the beautiful peace, not on the absence of air. The air will come in anyway. You know what happens sometimes? Again, it's quite strange. But when you get into a very deep meditation, you don't need to breathe. I mean, you literally are not breathing at all. The air is not going in and out of your body. And still the blood is oxygenated. You don't need it. I'm not quite sure exactly how it works. But it's happened a few times, I've seen. And you know, can't say to myself because I wouldn't be aware that it's going in or going out, you've left the body at that time. But seeing it in others, it looks like they're not breathing. But they're still warm, the body is warm. And that's the difference. Which means even though they're not breathing, they don't need air. The body will breathe when it needs to. You just do the watching, the peace, the letting go. And hopefully that one day that will just give that last little bit of feeling of safety that you can let go. And I'd imagine the breath will stop for a while and then it'll start to breathe again. But it's not a danger. It's perfectly safe. How you can handle this is be a bit more courageous. Just push the boundaries a little bit and see what happens. I say this because I know it's perfectly safe. And from unknown, Ajahn, please say something to people who live on their own and have to face loneliness during lockdown. Thank you. And I live on my own. I spend so much time in solitude. You know, even though every now and again you meet people. But is solitude being alone? And I realized when I did 6 months when I never saw a human being, never talked to anybody, I was by myself in a nice 6 months, really solitary retreat in the monastery down at Serpentine. It's a beautiful time. And I never felt lonely for a minute. I was always with my best friend, which was me. And I was always with nature, and nature delighted me. You can just look through the window, you can see the stars, you can see the clouds, the heat, you see the coolness. Even see I'm not joking here, that sometimes when you learn how to be still, you can see the carpet, and the carpet is beautiful. Because when you don't see what's the negativity in life, you see the positivity. Oh, I'm by myself. I have nothing to do, I can meditate, I can rest if I need to rest, I can catch up on reading. Whatever you need to do, just learn how to see the value in solitude, and don't call it lonely. If you feel lonely, you're looking for something to do, something to distract yourself, something to waste your time on. This is an opportunity at this time to get to know yourself and the beauty of solitude, and the beauty of this moment, the simple joys of just feeling the breeze on your face. These are things which, when you're busy life, you don't have. So I said, I think, last night, that many times that people would complain about all the work they had to do. And they had money, but they were time poor. Now many people are time rich, but they don't know how to spend that time. And many people who are rich don't know how to spend their money. So now you are time rich. Learn how to value every moment. Really see and feel. And don't waste the time, you know, just watching TV or movies on the internet or something. Just more of the same. Spend time by yourself. Learn how to meditate. Be at peace with this moment. Be at peace with yourself. And for many people in this world, and obviously myself, I enjoy solitude more than anything else. Give me just a week in my cave instead of a week in front of an audience. I love that, being alone. Sorry, being in solitude. Oh, from the UK. Dear Ajahn, can meditation help prevent us from getting sick?
Yes.
If so, was it karma from past lives that made Ajahn Chah ill at the end of his life? Obviously karma has a great contribution to Ajahn Chah's sickness, but it wasn't just the karma from the past life, because karma of the past life gives us an inclination, a push in one particular direction. But especially for Ajahn Chah, it was mostly overwork. That is my reflection on his life. He just gave up his solitude to teach so many others. He never had much time by himself in the last few years. And when I see that, I always remember to give myself plenty of opportunities to rest, to be alone, to be in a cave and meditate a lot and be very, very peaceful. Otherwise your body wears out, that's all it is. So Ajahn Chah was worn out, but so what? He did a wonderful service for so many years. So many years of teaching and helping. What more could he have given? He gave enough. So a wonderful time for Ajahn Chah. Okay, that's no more questions, only four questions today. So, didn't watch the clock, but it's finished on time for change, 4:15. So I wish you all happiness and well-being. And make use of whatever opportunity life gives you. If you are in lockdown, wonderful time. Call it a wonderful time, see the beauty in it. If you have to work hard, see the beauty in working hard. With people, by yourself, all of these is a great opportunity to learn. And if there's any difficulty you experience with sickness or with anxiety or loneliness or whatever, these are your teachers. Ajahn Chah would always say, any problem, call it Ajahn. Ajahn means teacher. Not Ajahn Brahm, but Ajahn loneliness. It's teaching you something. So don't run away from it with trying to waste time on books or just sleeping too much, or TV, or internet. Just understand what loneliness is. Get into it. And you find all it is you don't really know yourself well enough. When you know yourself well, you're far more delightful as a companion than you'd ever expect. So thank you all for listening. And just a little bit of announcement that we're not doing a sutta class on Sundays. We're just doing the Friday night Dhamma class, as I did last night, and also the Saturday afternoon meditation. And of course I'll be back again, I expect, not necessarily, but who knows what might happen, but I expect to be here next Friday night and Saturday afternoon to give another class. So may you all be happy and well. And as I promised to this Indonesian fellow, I'm going to give a blessing chant at the very end, the same chant which I gave in Indonesia in Medan, and he enjoyed it so much. So I will do it again to finish off today. Sabaroga Winimuto Sabasanta Pawajito Sabawera Mati Gando Nibuto Chatuang Bawa Sabitiyo Vivachantu Sabarogo Vinasatu Mate Bhavan Vantarayo Sukhitikayu Gopava Apivadanhasile Sanichang Uta Pachalino Chataro Dhammavatanti Ayuvano Sukhang Palang. Very good. Excellent. So, over and out. Look forward to teaching you next week. Okay, excellent.